This is Justin Arnett Graham.
This is Nareeba Shepherd.
And this is Terms of Service. Bam! That's beautiful. And also, good morning.
Good morning.
Because we're doing this good morning thing again. And yeah. It's how are you feeling?
It makes me feel like a time where I would sleep for a couple of hours and then wake up at the crack of ass to crack eggs for
okay.
people.
Okay.
Except I don't have to do that. I'm just where it would happen.
Okay, got it.
So
okay.
It's like, it feels like I'm at brunch, but I'm not responsible for anything.
It feels very existential.
Yeah.
All right, well,
yeah.
Well, good morning on that.
Yeah. How about you? How you doing?
I'm very well. I'm well. I have no complaints, but if I did, we ain't got time for them. So it's entirely all good.
Mm-hmm.
We have another guest.
Yes, we do.
And I'm really excited about this one. Hi, Thomas.
Hey, buddies.
How are you?
I'm good.
Great. If you would like to introduce yourself and, you know, we'll get into the topic and the topics mm-hmm. at hand.
All right. My name's Thomas Mooneyham. I'm the local or Chicago brand ambassador for Dewar's Scotch and the 5 single malts that go into them.
Amazing.
I primarily look after the single malts.
Yes.
Great.
And I also cover different parts of the Midwest, but due to company-wide travel restrictions over the last year or so, those have...
You don't say.
I know, it's kind of weird, right?
You know, it's just like, there was the thing that, you know, as Ryan Pfeiffer mentioned, the pterosaur.
Well, yes, yeah, pterosaur is the overarching term
right.
for winged dinosaur.
Correct.
I am actually growing a pterodactyl right now.
I have no idea what that
okay,
means.
Okay, so for my birthday, which was last week,
happy
or whenever,
birthday.
It's time. Thank you.
Happy
anyway.
Are you fishing for that?
No. Oh my God, we have a whole thing about that. Don't you worry about it. I love you. But I got one of those grow your own things, and it's a pterodactyl, but it grows to 600% of its size.
Of and the size of a pterodactyl?
No, yeah, no, no. So like it started off like, let's say,
oh, okay.
how many inches
right,
is this?
Okay. So if
enough?
It's like, so, yeah, so yeah. if it's like the size of like a larger gummy bear, it would get 600%.
Yeah, but it's in the, like a 2 gallon size peanut butter pretzel
okay.
jar.
Okay.
And it is day 9. So tomorrow's the last day it grows for 10 days. So yeah, we've been in a panini with the pterodactyl for like 10 days now.
Okay.
For a second, because it is early, I thought you meant somebody gave you like a gift the size of a pterodactyl.
I fucking
that's
wish.
That's going to grow to be like the size of a Boeing 747.
Oh my God, that made me feel uncomfortable.
And like, that actually sounds like one of the worst gifts.
Like when you said that, I thought about the same fear that I have for whales, where if I imagine a whale being in the same space as me, I freak out because they're too big. They breathe water. Why are they mammals? The ocean is terrifying. I'm done.
You're a land-based creature.
Yes,
though, so 100%. Like you're good.
I am.
You know, well.
Well, I'm from an island.
Fair.
Yeah.
So
fair.
There is that.
Yeah.
Well, again, hi, Thomas.
Yeah,
hey, buddy.
Yeah, that was...
A lot of this is going to be edited, I assume.
Oh,
no.
Yeah, you know,
actually,
never
it's just,
ramble
it's just
me out.
One, it's just one rolling take. So
you know what?
It's,
let's go.
It's fine.
One shot.
You know, we do this every episode.
Yeah.
And I think that it's become a bit of our tradition now.
Yeah.
You know, what's your sign?
I'm a Cancer.
No.
And like very, very, very much. So a Cancer.
Are
so
you
what
a
I know
June
about a
or
Cancer.
July Cancer.
I'm a July Cancer.
Yeah,
July 17th.
That's real. Yeah, that's real.
So
real.
Is that like an emotional? Like are Cancers emotional?
So traditionally, Cancers. I mean, think of what our symbol is or the sign. It's
I don't
a crab.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
So like hard shell, usually wet.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Again, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes.
No, but like hard shelled creatures.
Inside.
Soft, gooey inside. So, like the
so
Cancer.
You have a hard facade.
Yeah, you know, traditionally we put up like a brave face,
aww.
But really just a giant emotional mess.
Max knows.
Some would say like disaster on the inside. So,
Well, I'm giving you an air hug because I feel like that's hug worthy.
Yeah.
Do Cancers want hugs?
during COVID?
No. I mean, not now. I mean, just
I've hugged you before.
General.
I've known you for like 15 years.
I mean, this is entirely true. Like, I mean, these are the facts.
Fair.
But
have a resident cancer.
Our producer, always Max. This is true. Mm-hmm. Hi, Max.
Like, really, how we doing?
You look fun to hug, by the way. Like, you look like you give good hugs.
Oh, he is a great time to hug.
Thank you. I try very hard.
Okay. he doesn't have to try at all. It's just the gift that keeps on giving.
All right, well, let's
stay ready. You don't have to get ready.
You damn right.
That is real.
Damn right.
So,
it's like a Boy Scout. Well, what are you guys? I'm not going to...
Well, I'm an Aquarius. I never really know what that means, but apparently I really am one.
He's full of ideas, and scheduling is only a thing that lives in his mind. But it gets done every time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bada bing, bada boom. Mm-hmm.
Can I ask a question about Aquariuses?
Sure.
Do most Aquariuses usually send a text saying, I have a question, and then not actually tell you?
Okay, listen. Yes. I want to go ahead and address this, okay, before we get into all of this. A long time ago, someone reached out to me and they felt that I was being highly inconsiderate with just sending them text messages requesting things from them. So I believe that I should start with a salutation, and I do not respond until I believe that you are in the space to receive what I am requesting from you. And if you take too goddamn long, okay, I forget. And I just figure it out. And I know that there's a whole bunch of looks that are coming this way right now.
We just talked about this.
But I'm just saying.
I don't think anyone in this room cares. We just know you and love you. So you could just your shot 100%.
Great. Like, I have unlimited text. Okay. So.
God damn it, Thomas. No, Reba, what is your sign?
I'm an Aries. we're pretty great.
I am very humble.
No.
Oh.
Where I feel like they don't talk about imposter syndrome being like the number one part of the Aries personality trait. But I feel really confident, and then I start talking and I'm like, maybe that's what it's like.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sweet. Well,
all right, so this has been a great podcast. So that's
a
wrap, right?
Yeah, we're done. We're done.
Thank you guys so much.
You know, it was great. Well, now that you know we've loosened up a little bit, Thomas, if you would like to talk to us a little bit about your background and you know, just who you are, so people can get to know the Thomas Mooneyham.
I'm a Cancer.
Okay, and that's really great. Okay, well, again, it's a wrap, so thank you.
All right. My name is Thomas Mooneyham. Like I said earlier, I look after the 5 single malt scotches within the Dewar's portfolio. Mm-hmm. I've been in restaurants in some capacity for almost 20 years now. I think I started when I was 14 or 15. I had a slew of terrible jobs, including Marble Slab Creamery, I don't eat ice cream for a reason, because I used to have to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And Flat Top Grill, where people would make their own food and then scream at me because it didn't taste good.
Oh my God. I remember Flat Top Grill. There was one on like Belmont, and there was also one downtown. My dad would take me there for lunch, and we would both be like, this was a choice.
I don't know this one.
Oh, Flat Top?
Yeah.
To create your own stir fry restaurant.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get a bowl, you load up with ingredients, and then you basically give it to the Flat Top.
Yep.
And then they
And
then they yell at you, Thomas.
Yeah, so there'd be like a series. You'd have like all your different veggies and then protein options. Mm-hmm. And most importantly, different sauces.
Oh my God.
Which is where all the flavor comes from. Okay. And I would often instruct people how many different ladles of sauce to use. Mm-hmm. And then I would watch them use no sauce. And then when I would go to touch on the table, they would be very upset because their food was bland and kind of shitty. And wow. I was like 16. Like, I don't want to do this. Like,
you're like, this is,
I don't want to be here.
Not a good time. But you moved on past that.
No, yeah. I actually still.
No, because it really. It's just like, so emotionally, you're still there.
You know, I still talk about it a lot, so okay, I don't know.
It's fine. Yeah. I'm learning so much about the Cancer character.
I've definitely moved on from Flat Top in many ways.
Great.
So Flat Top is where you cook your own food.
Well, you give it to someone to cook for so like liability reasons.
Never mind. So in Boston, we also served there's fire alcohol. And ice, which is like that. So all the food comes on ice and then you take it over to the fire. I remember. Okay. Yeah. Right. I remember frequently watching people in Boston not use sauce and get upset with this man as well. So, yeah.
It was also really great for getting tips when people make their own food and then figure like, I just did all the work, which I'm honestly like not arguing. Like you did do all the work. Yeah. Well, I gave you waters and some guidelines.
Yeah, it's like you just had a great time.
Yeah. But yeah. Sweet. So from there, I thankfully moved on to different opportunities. I started working in just more classic conventional restaurants with menus and a kitchen.
Four walls.
You know, you come, you order your food, someone brings it to you.
You chew it.
I mean, we can go through every step. I mean, but like, I feel like we don't need to for the sake of time.
It. Yeah, I feel like we got it.
Yeah, it's fine. Start working at a little place up in Evanston called the Bluestone, like real like family run burger beer spot. You know, really popular on like college football days. Mm-hmm. We were right down the street from Northwestern's football stadium.
Nice.
I still have like mixed feelings about Ohio State.
I lived in Columbus, Ohio.
So you do too.
Absolutely.
There's some really great bars in Columbus, though.
Yeah, there What's are that also area? Some the really Short North. Great people. Yes, I used to live in the Short North.
The Short North is cool. There's a bar, Oddfellow. Which is just opened a couple years ago. Really, really cool place.
Nice. I will say,
I like it.
Yeah, and
the name.
Yeah, I feel like Columbus is. It's got a lot going on, and if I hadn't gone there for about 3 years, I wouldn't have known. And I'm not saying like a lot going on. Like I mean, it's this mecca, but like for what it is, it'll surprise you.
Okay.
So. But I haven't really been back Ohio. In years, so
I don't know her. Okay, well, so
she out there though. But
oh yeah, there's a lot of Ohio out there.
I mean, I've driven through it.
And they make it very clear. Make it very clear.
But I don't know her.
Don't get me started on a Buckeye.
Anyhow. Yeah, let's move on.
So
I started working at this little burger spot. I served there for years. And then the day after my 21st birthday, we had a bartender who no called, no showed. And they asked if I could just jump behind the bar because I was like legal to do that now, literally by 24 hours. and, just the nature of the place it was, it wasn't a cocktail bar or anything. I learned how to like pour beers and make 5 ounce vodka martinis, shaken, obviously, with lots of spice chips.
Yeah.
Ooh, this is crispy and icy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's 5 or 6 ounces of straight vodka.
Right. I had a martini at Morton's the other day.
Yeah.
And it was the first time I had one in a long time. And it was delightful.
I can't do a martini. It was lay me out.
Six
on my
ounces
ass.
Of gin. I mean, we couldn't do shit after that. We had a wine flight and I was like, no.
Well, I mean, we might get a little bit more into this later when we're talking about like sobriety, but the problem with martinis and the glassware is it's a perfect vessel to just pour an entire 5 ounces straight into your gullet.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, so started bartending there. And as soon as I stepped behind the bar, I kind of fell in love with it. I really like having that barrier between myself and guests and just a little bit more of a creative outlet, a little bit more control of your own environment.
Right.
So from there, I realized that I just want to like keep moving forward in bartending. Worked at a few other places, worked a couple places in San Diego. One of them where I had to dress up like an old timey cowboy bartender. It was kind of like medieval times, but
I think we're going to
end it there.
Try and source that, just for promo content.
So there are probably some photos that exist.
Great.
But no, it was a good job actually. And learned a lot about cocktails and cocktail development and then moved back to Chicago, got a job at Graham Elliott. So this was 12 years ago, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was 2010, so whatever that is, 11 years.
Last year didn't count.
Oh.
10 years.
Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
so bad with numbers now.
No, like, you're fine.
Yeah. It's still 2017, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
I have no concept of time. And when people are like, it's 2021, I'm like, I'm 28 still, and I don't know what you're talking about. It's fine. My nephew took the SATs, and that really fucked me up.
Yeah.
But
I hope he did okay.
Me too. Sorry.
Where were we?
We were
oh yeah, so yes. Got a job at Graham Elliott, working the bar there. That was a really great job for a few different reasons. One, it was kind of like during the height of Graham Elliott and his TV show, so it was just a very fun environment to work in.
Yeah.
But two is the first bar that I ever worked at where it really had like a think outside of the box, like there is no box mentality. Amazing. When it comes to food and beverage creation.
Sweet.
So that was really cool. And within a short time, me and a couple of the other bartenders were essentially running the bar. We had a beverage director for a while, but it didn't work out. And it was just a really, really, really fun place to be. Looking back, our pastry chef hated me because I would use service as a time to like workshop cocktails. And I would always walk into the kitchen during service and go like, I have an idea, and she'd be like 30 tickets deep just be like, you need to leave, like,
funny thing about like, your idea,
yeah, you know what, you know,
like, yeah,
have it later,
not yeah. now, or earlier, like yeah. like like just we're in the middle of service, like yeah. you have a full bar, what are you doing, like I want to work on something.
Just like, is there no people on
large
there?
Cancer?
Or no, we have a full vibes. Restaurant. Like,
large cancer vibes.
Yeah, but yeah, like this is kind of about me right now. Okay. So
this would make me feel great if you could help me.
But I look brave while asking.
Yes.
Like,
Max knows.
No, but it was a yeah. it was a good gig. And yeah, it was like one of the first kind of more high profile spots that I worked at.
Mm-hmm.
Left there to help a friend open a place up in Andersonville and was there for a little while. And one night I was at the Charleston, one of the finest bars in the city, if not
I
the country.
I've been to the Charleston in a minute, but damn, I love that place.
It's
I
one
like
of
the
those.
Name.
Nice it's shout a out. Good, yes. good bar. And I was there talking to an old buddy, Clint Rogers. And I just mentioned to him, hey, Clint, I was like, hey, you know, so like my time at this project that I was working with and kind of consulting on was wrapping up. You know, I'm looking for something different. And at that point, he was running Henri and the Gauge. Mm-hmm. And he told me, he's like, you know, I think I might have an opportunity for you. Why don't you go and talk to this guy named Billy Lawless? I didn't know that.
Badass name.
He's a badass. Yeah, badass name. Badass dude. He's also like 12 feet tall and like just pure muscle, like ex-rugby player. One of the most daunting, terrifying teddy bears in the world.
I'm like
rugby
6'5".
Rugby players are that.
And I feel short.
Yeah, he scares me.
Yeah, so.
He once went to like slap me on my back as a like, hey, how are you?
Yeah.
And I fell out of my bar stool.
I want to meet this man.
But I went in there and we chatted and I ended up running the bar at both of his restaurants. So I was spending all of my time working the Henri bar, which is like a very small, intimate, French-inspired at the time restaurant, but overseeing the behemoth that is the Gauge next door, which is, you know, doing 1,200 covers in a day. You know, 30 people at the bar at all times.
Yeah. Wow.
And it was very challenging, actually, to, like, spend all my time in this, like, very small, slower-moving, intimate place.
Yeah.
But oversee this giant, giant bar program. So that, and also, I'm not really, like, a fine dining guy.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about poop earlier.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, like, at an intimate French restaurant. They everyone
did.
Does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Justin... Didn't
I did not partake. It's fine. You know, it's okay.
So Billy and I both agreed that it would actually be better if I just went to the Gauge. And from there, you know, we started doing a lot of cool stuff, a lot of new menus, really started going after like the PR thing. We wanted the Gauge to be known as much for being a bar as it was for being a restaurant. And I think we did a really great job doing that. So yeah. I was there for a few years. You know, won some cool awards while I was there. And then,
what, you know, one of the cool awards.
I was going to ask.
Chicago's hottest bartender.
You know,
2013.
That's
is that
actually
the award that we're talking about. What are you talking about?
No.
Oh, damn. Damn.
That no, I was thinking like 30 under 30 from Zach.
Oh yeah, so. No, I mean okay, there's, the, I mean we're gonna get to that, but you know it's just like that's pretty cool too.
and so because there was like a lot of you know PR behind the bar program, I eventually got approached by Moet Hennessy to start doing part time brand work, which was at first, it was a lot of just like working events. So, you know, Chicago Gourmet, Chefs on the Grill.
Was that like a gateway for branding?
Definitely.
That one? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, that was my, that was me sticking my toe in the water of going into brand work. I was 25 or 26 and still very much wanted to be behind the bar. Mm-hmm. So the part time thing worked out really, really great. So I was doing that. I ended up leaving the Gauge. I was still doing part-time work with Moet Hennessy. Got a job at Bar DeVille, rest in peace, which was my favorite bar job that I ever had. Just super fun party atmosphere, but like little local neighborhood bar that would turn into complete chaos on weekends with, you know, 100 people lines outside. And giant, giant dance parties in the back. And it was
that
great.
Gives
it was
me
one of
now.
Oh yeah,
like
right.
No.
That many people.
COVID, what?
But it was great because, like, coming from you know different forms and different levels of like fine dining, it was the first place where I could like tell someone to fuck off.
Yeah,
if I
mean that's
to.
That's how I feel about my time at L2O, and
sure.
Then also juxtaposing that with. Small bar,
yeah,
you know, just I'm like the things that I simply cannot say over here. Mm-hmm. You're damn right that I'm doing it over here, or like on this side.
I'm not allowed to talk to people.
Okay, that's
that's why I work in the kitchen.
You know, that's
and
fair.
Working at like Blackbird and Green River and stuff just made it worse.
Okay,
so I wasn't allowed. Well, Blackbird didn't make it worse. Green River made it worse, but I shouldn't talk to people, which is why I was confused when Justin was like, you want to talk to people on the internet?
You can say anything on the internet.
You can't, which is why we talked about poop for like an hour.
Fair.
Before
there
we
go.
Started.
It's really weird how this keeps creeping back up again.
Everybody poops. I have kimchi and egg for breakfast.
I wasn't going to go into details.
Yeah, no.
We're going with that.
No, you're fine.
No, there were definitely, when I started at DeVille, I definitely like came in hot with the whole say whatever you want mentality.
Yeah.
And there were definitely a few times that like my manager and the owner were like, tone it down just a tad. Like, all right, that's actually fair.
And you're like, but I actually meant what I said.
I always mean it. Yeah.
Well, can I interject with a relevant segue, but also a growth moment. What I learned when I became an executive chef and like dealing with sous chefs, I learned this from my executive chef, Rick Olamacher, love you. He taught me not to go into a place with what I call the Columbus attitude, which is like you come in and you're like, this is the way that we do it. You have to like learn the culture of the place.
Absolutely.
And then like, you know, then you can start to interject, but you can't Columbus
it. You mean don't
it.
Come in with a colonizer mentality?
Yes.
Oh, shocking. Mm. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay.
As a white man, that's hard for me.
You know, it's kind of...
Edit that out,
it's
please.
It's kind of...
I've often been told that I have the personality of a white man, so I understand.
I understand that. And so, Bar DeVille.
Bar DeVille. Yeah. Was there for a long time, on and off, like, be there for a few months at a time for 3 or 4 years. Then I also started doing full-time Moet Hennessy work. We developed a program called the Mixology Ambassador. I hate the word mixology, by the way. And we started it here in Chicago, and it was very successful. So we ended up moving that into 5 other markets.
Sweet.
Left Moet Hennessy to go work for a company called Phillips Distilling. Phillips makes like 400 different marks. I helped lead up their craft program, though.
Wow.
So like Prairie Organic Spirit. Like SKUs or items. So I led up their or helped lead their craft ambassador program. So prairie organic spirits, Tomatin Scotch, Mark and Negra Mezcal. They also make UV blue and like all you, yeah. So nice. I apologize for all the hangovers that sugar juice made. Yeah. It is delicious.
It is delightful.
UV salted watermelon.
Yo, I used to mix UV
blue. Don't say watermelon around me because it's a problem. Mm.
Vitamin Water 50 and UV Blue make the cocktail called Fabric Softener, and it is
You're
delightful.
Welcome for that, Thomas. You're
Thank you.
Welcome.
You made that happen.
Not touching it.
Oh, it's a, you know,
I,
know. Yeah,
I mean, it's in the air, you know, but like, I'm going to leave it. Yeah,
it's literally right in the middle of it.
Yes.
But, you know.
I never had the salted watermelon.
It's good.
Okay.
My boss at the time, a woman named Marla, she's actually the one who came up with the idea for salted watermelon, and I always like kind of gave her the like,
praise hand emoji.
Yes, mm-hmm, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I realize this is a podcast, and you can't see me do that.
Oh, I do shit like that all the time. You're fine. They can feel it.
They can feel it. Yes.
So we did that, or I did that here in Chicago for a year, and then they moved me out to LA for a year.
Casual.
10 days after my daughter was born, I had to call my wife and tell her, like, hey, so I think we're going to have to start packing.
Also, your daughter's adorable.
She is. She's really cool. Mm-hmm.
And an Aries, just saying.
And also...
You're welcome.
She's got an attitude.
Yeah, I mean...
but she's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's great. I'm not tired all the time.
Fair.
Yeah. We decided that it was time to start thinking about heading back to Chicago. Mm-hmm. I had a growing interest in scotch. One of the things that I really wanted to do is coming from a portfolio ambassador standpoint, where I had to cover lots of different types of liquor. I really wanted to like focus and hone in on one, and I had a huge interest in whiskey. Talked to a few friends of mine over at Bacardi, and they told me that they were hiring for this single malts position. Went through the process, and we actually started moving back, and we bought a house entirely dependent on me getting this job. Mm. And
Coffee.
I had, what? Yeah, risky. Let's go with risky.
Okay.
Our lender was not thrilled at all. Like, he hated me. He's like, so do you have that job yet? Like, no, but can I have like few hundred thousand dollars.
Yeah, you're just like, you know, let me hold it.
And I was driving back alone with my dogs, and I was in a hotel in Albuquerque, motel, let's be honest, motel in Albuquerque, where you could still smoke cigarettes inside.
Oh.
Shocking.
Yeah.
And this was like, a few years ago. Like, this wasn't like 1981.
Interesting. Yeah. Because I'm not that shocked. Because if I had to think of Albuquerque and I had to think of New Mexico, I would think that that'd be right up in their vibe.
You know, I do remember like walking into the motel room and seeing the ashtray.
Yeah.
And just thinking like, yeah.
Yeah, like seeing, you know, seeing the ashtray, feeling the stale smoke that was smoked there prior.
Listen, in college we used to request hotel rooms that allowed smoking so that we did not have to go outside to smoke a spliff in winter because New Hampshire is real.
Fair.
Yeah.
Also, their motto is live free or die. So, like, smoking is probably still allowed in their hotels.
I'm sure.
This is true.
Albuquerque's beautiful.
I would love to go.
New Mexico, beautiful state.
Yeah.
Big. A lot of land. Like,
you're like, it's spatial.
Yeah, not
know?
Much else.
Yeah. Lots
and
of
then, so yeah, got back to Chicago, started the job looking after these five beautiful and amazing whiskeys.
Amazing.
And been doing it for, you know, almost 3 years now. So sweet. That's where we are.
What about this whiskey?
This whiskey, Aberfeldy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So we, like I mentioned earlier, within the Dewar's portfolio, we have five different single malts. Mm-hmm. And with Dewar's, we like to say that we don't really have a recipe. We have a standard, and that standard is that all five of our single malt whiskeys will go into every bottle of Dewar's blended scotch. Mm-hmm. From there, it's up to our master distiller, Stephanie, to handpick up to 40, 45 different other whiskeys to make sure that every bottle of Dewar's blended scotch tastes the same.
Oh, wow.
Having said that, Aberfeldy is very much the heart and soul of Dewar's. It's the only distillery that was ever built by the Dewar's family. Oh, wow. So that was Tommy and... John Jr. and Tommy.
Mm-hmm.
And they were the sons of John Doerr, who started Doerr's back in 1846 from a little shop in Scotland. And it's the backbone of our blended Scotch portfolio. You know, Doerr's is known for this kind of noted honeyed richness that you'll find in every sip of it. And if you guys taste Aberfeldy as you just did, you'll notice that it is incredibly honey forward. It's not a sweet whiskey. You know, by law, we can't add sugar or do anything to kind of manipulate the spirit or flavor profile in any way. We're allowed to like mess with fermentation times and casks, but that's really about it. But they just developed this really, really beautiful, smooth, easy drinking, honey forward whiskey. And I like to always tell people, I understand that Scotch can be a abrasive spirit for some people. And I think that's because a lot of people, myself included, like my first experience with Scotch was finding some old bottle of like Laphroaig or something at my grandpa's house, blowing the dust off, and it tastes like Band-Aids and cigarettes. And I don't mean that in a bad way. Like I love that in a Scotch, like a really peaty Scotch, really smoke forward Scotch. Right. But a lot of people think that's what all Scotch is, and not everyone loves that. But Aberfeldy is, it doesn't have that peatiness. You know, there's a bit of smoke, but that's just naturally occurring wood smoke in there. And it's just, it's a great spirit. I always say it's an excellent bridge whiskey, you know, for people who are already drinking whiskey in some way. So like American, bourbon, rye, Canadian, Irish, and want to learn more about Scotch as a category, start them with an Aberfeldy.
I'm like a rye whiskey person. And I remember the first time I tried Scotch, I cannot remember what kind of Scotch it was, but I was working at Kit Kat Lounge in Boys Town.
I lived right around the corner from there.
Excellent place.
And I called it summer camp when I worked there because it was just for the summer, and I was out. But my friend Phil...
That was me at Flat Top.
You understand.
For 3 years.
My friend Phil saw me as he was going home. He was working at Blackbird at the time, coming out of Kit Kat, and he was like, I need to talk to you about leaving this place. Come to my house and we'll have some Scotch. And I was like, I don't think I like Scotch. And he was like, you're going to learn to like it. So the first time I had it, I was 23. And I was like, this is like drinking a cigar. Whatever it was, Phil Bailey, you should let me know. But I did not enjoy it. And now Scotch is my like jam. Like it's the only liquor that I will have at all times at my house.
Yeah.
And I've never had this until today, and it is freaking delightful.
Thank you. Yeah. I always say thank you like I played some role, but I don't. But no, it's I love Scotch. It's an incredibly complex spirit, and it is truly one of those spirits that like you should enjoy slowly and savor it. Highballs, neats, however you want to do it, but like I really like a neat Scotch with a little bit of water in it. It opens it up,
same.
And you could sit there and kind of explore it for an hour, 2 hours one pour.
Absolutely. And so this, this has been quite educational, and also thank you so much for, you know, enlightening us on your journey. But, you know, I do want to shift the tone of the conversation to really talk about the reality here, right? So you are, you know, an amazing representative of this amazing, amazing brand. However, you are sober.
Yes.
Yes. And
haven't always been.
Same. same
yeah,
here.
Yeah.
And so I do want to preface this next phase of conversation to where, you know, obviously thank you again, but there's going to be some things that I believe will come up that could be triggering to some people, and I would just like to put that out there. But I would like to hear about, you know, your journey of sobriety, how you got to this point, how you're feeling, and you know, also deeper parts of it. It's just like, how bad did did it get? What kind of made you want to, you know, do differently, if you will?
Sure. I mean, I'm pretty open when it comes to this sort of thing. Alcoholism is something that has run in my family for a while. My dad was an alcoholic. He luckily or thankfully stopped drinking before I was born, but you know, it's something that was always there. Mm-hmm. I love alcohol. I think alcohol is great. I think I might have loved it a little too much. Mm-hmm. But I mean, if you think about it, alcohol is there for almost every celebration, you know, right. in your mm-hmm. life, you know, parties starting at like, let's say 21. We'll call it 20. Yeah, yes. Like legal drinking age. Yes. But
I'm Caribbean Island again. They literally used to sell the idea of a shandy, which is like 3% alcohol content, as like a beverage for children.
Well, it's gonna help you nap.
The first I accidentally got lit when I was like, I want to say 9 or 10 by accident, because I had 3 of them at a gathering, and someone had to walk me home, and I was like, why is this a thing?
Because it is, sadly.
So yeah. I'm hoping that it has changed since then in Trinidad.
But I doubt it.
I know.
No, but I mean, you know, alcohol consumption is in some way involved with most forms of celebration throughout the world, or throughout most of the world, from baseball games, birthdays, weddings, you know, and hanging out with your friends, you know.
Socializing.
The end of a work week. The end of a work day.
Absolutely.
You know.
Podcast recording.
There you go.
Right.
So I don't want to talk shit about drinking or alcohol. You know, it just took me, you know, probably about 20 years to realize that it just wasn't for me anymore. I've always, or like I said earlier, you know, I've been in the restaurant industry for most of my life. And I do think that, you know, obviously for many reasons, you know, we're exposed to more. we have easier access to alcohol than any other industry I can think of.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's become very common in most places that I've worked at, with the exception of Billy Lawless's place. You know, having a sip or two on the job after a shift, you know, sitting at the bar when you're counting up your cash for the end of the night, which is hopefully a lot.
Hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Not the flat top money, but.
Hey, yeah, those $27 a night really added up.
And that's on a Friday, y'all.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
But it was like 2003, so nowadays that's like $31.
Yeah. So, inflation. Like,
yeah.
Thank God for that.
And then, so, you know, I always partook, you know, I was always in, involved in some way for the most part. And, you know, being an ambassador, a huge, or at least I thought, and wrongfully so, that a huge part of my job was drinking. Since I stopped drinking, I've met a lot of ambassadors and other beverage professionals who don't drink. But COVID started. You know, our jobs were up in the air. The world was on fire. I had a lot of kind of terrible stuff going on in my personal life. And I took what was above average, but semi-normal amounts of drinking to the next level. You know, I just, you know, I kind of hunkered down, you know, didn't really leave my house for a while. Unabombered it and just, I was drinking way too much.
Yeah.
For a long time too. You know, I think that when COVID started, everybody had this mindset, or a lot of people had this mindset of like, you know what? Social distance, like 2 weeks, let's flatten the curve, or whatever that, now looking back, bullshit phrase was. You know, just get drunk for a week or two, and you know,
I
the world.
I convinced myself we would have a bar.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, I'm about to start a bar in the house, because what the fuck?
Yeah.
It's a speakeasy.
Yeah.
They're illegal.
Just, I'm like training the 10-year-old to be a bartender. Just
we're
going to
go ahead and edit
it.
That right out.
I was joking. I'm not going to let her do that. She's a Capricorn. She's crazy.
Fair.
Doers and Aberfeldy has no part in this.
Thank you. Thank you.
my bosses are out there.
Yeah.
Or the lawyers.
Yeah.
No, no, but, you know, I turned to it, to something or as something that would just essentially numb me. And I did that for a very, very, very long time. And at first it was okay. And then it just got to the point where I was drinking way too much, by myself, neglecting a lot of responsibilities. You know, I mentioned earlier that I do have a daughter, mm-hmm. and I wasn't being a good father to her. Mm-hmm. I was being a terrible employee. And it was probably back in October of last year when I really started thinking that I needed to dry out. And it was not only brought to my attention by myself, but my ex-wife, my mom, certain friends, you know, people who saw me and knew me well.
People who care about
people
you.
Who care, yeah. Definitely, yeah. Recognize that I just, like, I wasn't in a good spot, and it was better for me to stop drinking. So, you know, when people stop drinking, I don't know anyone who ever stopped drinking on their first go at it. I think a lot of people, myself included, would have like a few weeks and then kind of do this thing of, you know, I can have a beer.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
like 11 days later, like, yeah. I'm like, oh, shit.
Right.
Or
kind of like package it as like, you know, the relapse is like it was just a detox. You know, I was just detoxing.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I definitely did that a few times when I quote unquote stopped drinking, of like, you know what? I got it out of my system. You know, it's been a few weeks. Like, we can like ease back into it.
Mm-hmm.
I can drink like a normal person does. And it just doesn't. For people in my situation or similar situations, it just doesn't really work that way.
Yeah. I like had an experience a couple years back with a friend who, when I first moved to Chicago and met him, had been sober for years already. And I worked with him for a couple of years, and then we opened up a hotel together. And I remember the first time, like, the management team went out. We all went out together. We were like getting drinks, and I saw him get a drink, and like everything in my body tensed up, because I like went to school for social work, and so you like touch a lot of things on that journey, and addiction was one of them. And I remember like not wanting to talk to him directly about it, but talk to my boss and be like, you know this person, like, yeah. what's the deal? And like, it was really, really, he seemed really fine and good. And like a year and change after that, he had relapsed fully into everything that was part of it. So it's like, you can't, if you have an addictive personality or you're dealing with something that causes you to think about that, it's hard to take away one element of it and say like, oh, I can do this thing again. And he eventually ended up passing away, and we will never know if it's because of addiction or an accident or whatever. But I try to think of it as like, also as someone from the Caribbean and dealing with people who are like, mental illness is not real and it is about your ability to control yourself. I also think a lot about like what my drinking habits look like because of people in my family who refuse to admit that they're alcoholics, but also because they think that it's rooted in strength.
Sure.
And so yeah. like I'm glad that you talked about the fact that people go back and forth in the beginning or just in over the time of like dealing with sobriety, because just like depression, you're not fixing it, you're dealing with it every day. And I think right. some people think that once you've overcome it, that's it.
Yeah, what I realized is that alcoholism and addiction in general, I think, is kind of like a progressive disease. So
yeah.
if you stop for a while and then go back, you're not going to start over. You're not going back to day one, the first time I had a sip of beer. You're going back to day 3,000, whatever,
yeah.
you know, that time I drank you know, most of a bottle of whiskey by myself. You don't start with a clean slate,
yeah,
necessarily. Like you pick up where you left off. It's like an old friendship in a way. And
I can see that, yeah.
You know, like I always say, like a good friend is somebody you don't have to see for a year, and then you can kind of like just pick up right where that conversation left off. Yeah. And I realized after a few
very Ernest Hemingway-esque,
yeah,
you know,
terrible alcoholic, like
yeah.
Horrible.
He has like fantastic multiple drinks named after him.
Right.
But yeah, I just, you know, I there were definitely a few times that I thought that we can kind of just jump back in. And, you know, have a beer or have a whiskey. You know, I'm stressed out. Let's have one. And then from there, just, mm-hmm. you know, it snowballed. Yeah. And, you know, it took me a few times. I don't think that there's any shame in having a relapse or, you know, falling down. I had a boss who told me a long time ago, you know, don't be afraid to fail, but do fail fast. You know, like it's going to happen. Wow. Like, you know, if you fuck up, get it over with. Like, do it.
I don't know how I feel about it, but I like it.
Yeah. Well, I just, you know, if I may really, really quickly. So, I mean, as I've always mentioned here with terms of service, we are not a sober platform. We are a sober forward platform. And so we didn't necessarily want to enjoy the product because we are very, you know, familiar with it, but we do want to respect the conversation. And so we have this beautiful like Rob Roy that's inspired. Yeah, that is inspired by Aberfeldy. And it's
quite delightful.
Yeah, it's very unique. I don't drink Rob Roy's, but I'm familiar with the flavor profile. And this makes me feel like It makes me feel like it's doing what I would expect it to do if it was doing the other thing.
You know, so. The Rob Roy is a very delicious and classic cocktail. Yeah. For lack of a better phrase, it's a Scotch Manhattan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's Scotch, sweet vermouth. Yeah. Here we're using a non-alcoholic spirit and Lapsang Souchong tea.
Yes,
so
and this is
kind of brings in that subtle smokiness that you would find in a Rob Roy. It's delicious.
For sure. It is delightful.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ashley Christine. And so there's something that I also want to mention because I'm really, we've known each other for quite some time, Thomas. And so I just want to say that I think your journey has been just super inspiring to me personally, because there have been times to where I've had to take the hard look in the mirror to be like, Justin, bro, what the fuck are you doing? And specifically, this was a couple years ago. I met at a spot downtown for like my dad's birthday, and it was just like, you know, family friends were there. And I love me some mezcal. That is just the fact of the matter. A mezcal Negroni is my shit. Mm-hmm. And so I
didn't know that was an option.
Oh, yes, it is.
Yeah.
But anyhow, and so
they're good.
Yes,
I'm gonna.
Yes, no, he was writing that down. And so when I got home, I'll never forget that I was walking up the stairs. I live in a three flat, and I'm on the top level. And as I was getting up to the landing before my place, I tripped because I was blitzed out of my mind. Thankfully, it was winter. It was December specifically. Happy birthday, Dad. And I was wearing...
Is it the 25th? Your dad?
He... No.
Jesus?
No.
That dude, he was born in... April.
You know, and March. Yes.
May? Question mark?
Jesus. There's a lot of question marks there. It's right. And
he had blonde hair.
Okay.
He had dreads, okay? Yeah. She had dreads. So but anyhow, coming up to the final landing, and I trip over my own big ass feet, because I mean these are just the facts. But thankfully I'm wearing this like thick top coat. I fall so heavy into the window where like I go through the window and all of the glass is like if I wasn't wearing that coat, totally could have just like ended up going to the hospital and so on and so forth. And the following morning, my neighbor was just like, Justin, did you hear like that crazy like crashing last night? I was like, oh no, girl, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Someone tried to break in, be safe.
Yeah, I was just like, oh, you know, use the buddy system. You know, I was like, I have no idea what happened. And
I'm just picturing like a shard of glass in your neck.
No,
though.
Like literally.
You're like bleeding out.
Literally.
Like, I have no idea.
Literally. And so I can talk and joke about it now, but it was so terrifying to me because I realized that I was lacking a sense of self-control. And what has been great with just reducing my level of consumption and being familiar with, you know, different spirit-free options, it has helped me regain just like that element of my lifestyle. Because as you touched upon earlier, alcohol is so accessible to those in this industry. And, you know, I think it's really important for people outside of this industry to understand that. And, you know, just like anything else, and maybe more than a lot of things, you know, it's stressful. Mm-hmm. You know, like there are super points of stress within the context of this industry that fuel coping mechanisms such as alcoholism, such as, you know, drug abuse. I mean, there are things that I won't get into specifically, but it's like, as you're getting fucked up and you're on the downward slope, you know, kind of got to pick it up again, you know? And like, it just goes round and round, sadly. And yeah, it's just like, it's great to be able to talk so openly about this. Because I want people to know that, I mean, not drinking, reducing, you know, your level of consumption, mm-hmm. that is fine. And you don't have to explain that to anyone ever.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, I feel like I used to drink a lot. And then I started working in fine dining kitchens. And as a woman, I learned that if I wanted to make it, I would have to go out with the guys after work. And that's when my drinking went up significantly. Mm. But like the use of drugs to counteract the amount of drinking also went up. And I think once leaving food and this past year of being in quarantine, I can't drink like I used to. Right. And I think that putting it into perspective,
it dangerous as well.
Yeah, as like putting it into perspective, I was like, I am a social drinker because I won't drink by myself. And I think that
I realized
that in the beginning of quarantine, yeah. I was drinking by myself and I didn't like it because I couldn't do anything. And I think by the end of this situation, now I'm like, two glasses of wine, time to go to sleep. Like, that's where I'm at.
Yeah.
So, and for me, I think I try to think about it a lot because of like all of the people in my family who are like, I'm fine with drinking, but as a person on the outside, I'm like, no, you're not. And I try to like put that lens on myself a lot to be like, am I good? Like checking in with myself all the time. Yeah. But I feel like one of the other components of that is if you are thinking about it,
right,
you're probably more likely to do something about it than not.
Yeah, and that was a kind of, I don't want to say last straw, but it was a big wake-up call for me specifically because I was like, dude, you could have like really hurt yourself. And I have no idea what was going on. Like, just because at a certain point you just go on autopilot, right? Like, you have no idea how, you know, you made it to your sofa. You have no idea how you made it on the floor. You had no idea how you just passed out in the bathroom or wherever. It's because like your subconscious is like, well, I mean, you know, we got to get you to where you're going, but you have no recollection of it. And I was like, that is fucking terrifying.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that everybody who has had an issue with drinking, be it casual or not, has had some story, you know, maybe not necessarily almost fell through a window, but
yeah, that was,
you know, everybody has a story.
Yeah.
Where, like, looking back, you know, I have many where I should have realized, like
the warning signs.
Yeah. Like maybe I should have, you know, toned it down years ago.
Yeah.
But
are
I didn't.
You comfortable sharing any of those?
You know, nothing
signs
really or concrete comes to mind, but you know, I was married and I woke up on the couch a lot and not even having any like real recollection of like
why.
And then, you know, we would talk and I realized like, oh, I was just being a dick and I was drunk. And,
yeah,
you know, like as a kid, I used to get in a lot of fights. You know, I was a graffiti writer for a long time and I broke my leg because I was drunk and running on train tracks.
Okay, Thomas.
And, you know, just weird shit. But like looking back, you know, for years, so many of the negative parts of my life or like negative days or dark days, alcohol definitely played a role in them. And again, you know, I work for a liquor company. I think that, you know, drinking, if you're able to do it moderately, is great. It's outstanding. It's an awesome way to relieve stress.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of people drink to get drunk.
Yeah. How do you balance that?
What do you mean?
Being sober and also being an active participant in, you know, selling and placing these products.
It turns out I'm much better at my job sober. You know, I always took pride in my job. I've always been pretty good at what I do. You know, I know a lot of people in the industry and in the city, and you know, I consider myself to be a pretty good ambassador. But you know, when it started to spiral, you know, my numbers were definitely going down. Mm-hmm. And that's just because I wasn't really doing my job. And you know, the balance, you know, I talk to, we all have our bars that we go to, you know, I think everybody can, you know, kind of count their bars on, you know, one hand of, you know, their go-to places.
Yeah.
Right.
And my job is to be in as many bars as possible, but like, I'm talking like the places that I spend a lot of time at. And, you know, when I started trying to stop drinking, I talked to all of my good friends who work at these bars or own these bars and just said, you know, I was really nervous about it. I thought that, you know, I would be judged or people would give me a hard time
because
or like not,
like
yeah.
Yeah.
Or like not take me seriously. And, you know, so many places, you know, the bartenders, as soon as I would walk in, they would give me the kind of like international symbol of like, you know, shot.
Yeah.
And I learned that I really didn't have to do anything more than say like, no.
Yeah.
And nobody asked questions. Mm-hmm. You know, the few people that I did go into a little bit more in depth with, you know, half of them looked at me like, yeah, like,
yeah,
probably. Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Yeah. It's just okay, we're good here.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm in a unique position because my job is to still spend a lot of time in bars and restaurants, and it feels so natural just to have that whiskey in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I now have a running tally in my head of which bars have that good soda water. You know,
yes.
Like who has a good NA beer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I found that, you know, for me, and it's going to be different for anyone in, you know, a similar position though. It is, for me, it was just about being open and talking to people and just saying, you know, like, you know what? I don't drink. I don't have to go into details.
You
why,
don't. No,
you know,
no. Not at all.
That's my journey. It's my, my path. It's not yours, but
that's awesome.
I just don't want the whiskey anymore.
But for literally, sure.
But
like,
I do want the whiskey.
Yes.
Because Aberfeldy Single Malt Scotch is an award-winning.
And it is delightful.
Yes.
Keep
yes.
going with
yeah.
it.
Let's get that placement in there. Absolutely.
No, but it, you know, it's just the balance. There have been times that it's been an issue. You know, I found that what's harder for me and the thing that I still deal with isn't really sitting in a bar and you know, the bars I go to, the people I talk with are friends.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They're people that I can just sit across from and have a genuine conversation with.
Yeah.
Granted, for many of those years, that conversation was over whiskey. But, you know, turns out they're still my friends. They still want to have conversations and they want to see me do better.
Yeah.
So that hasn't been the issue. The issue for me, and I'm sure it always will be, just because it's so ingrained in me, is what I consider like habitual drinking. You know, it happened again the other day where, you know, I put my daughter to bed, cleaned up my place, did the dishes, you know, I'm wrapping up my night. And one of my first thoughts was like, oh, you know, time for that whiskey. And didn't have like a physical craving, didn't have like an emotional trigger, nothing. It was just that, you know, for years, I would wrap up my day by having a few whiskeys, and it still lingers in the back of my head. But I just have to remember, like, no, you know,
that's me for cigarettes.
Go play video games. Sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cigarettes are the same. When I quit smoking cigs, you know, it wasn't necessarily like a stressor for me. It was, you know, sitting in my car with the train going by, like, you know, and that was a great time to light up.
Bus stops. Waiting for the bus, walking to or from anywhere. That was my thing. But now I got my handle.
I got the same thing.
Yeah. And it keeps me from murdering. Keeps me from murdering.
Oh, yeah. No, I used to say I smoke for the safety of others. Like,
oh, that's what I have weed for.
Sure.
There you go. So I want to ask, just on the brand side, is there, you know, like, do you feel like brands, yours, you know, specifically, are doing enough to promote a balanced lifestyle within the industry?
Yeah, I do. And I also, you know, I've said it before, but I also do want to give like quick shout out to Bacardi and Team Enterprises.
Yeah.
Because they were one of the first who like brought it to my attention. And, you know, my old boss, she's since moved on, but she was the one who like sat me down, well, like via phone.
Yeah.
And just said like, hey, like, you need to like think about yourself. Like, do you want to like take some time and, you know, like kind of clean up? So I went on leave for a while. And Bacardi has been amazing through all of this. Dewars is owned by Bacardi.
Yeah, we didn't just make that for clear. People.
Yeah.
Just,
okay, so when I'm referencing Bacardi or Dewars, one and the same. Do I think that brands are doing a lot? I've noticed it over the last few years, you know, and I think that one of the first times I ever saw like a health and wellness initiative is at Tales of the Cocktail in like 2014, 2015, where back then I was still obviously drinking heavily, but some of the guys from like Employees Only and a few other bars put together a morning, like early morning yoga activation. And then people would drink like fresh squeezed juice after. And it was the first time I saw something at Tales that wasn't 100% about
related.
Drinking.
Yeah.
And I mean, admittedly, I saw that like flyer when like 7 a.m. Are you out of your fucking minds? So, like,
right.
That's how I felt
that's, today. Yeah, that's, like, I'm going to be drinking till like 6. So,
like, yeah, you're like,
I'm good.
Yeah, you can keep that hour.
But I mean, since then, I've talked to a lot of ambassadors from other suppliers, so like Diageo, Pernod, I'm with Bacardi. And yeah, you know, so many brands have something in place.
Yeah.
You know, we, with Aberfeldy, we have a program called Barrels and Bees, where because of how honey forward this whiskey is, we partner with local beekeepers and educate local or bartenders on like honey keeping, the plight of the honeybee, how important they are.
You better save the honey bees.
Yeah, we need to save these goddamn
they got
bees.
Problems.
Yeah,
and we just start fucking that
no,
shit
they
up.
Have problems like we have problems.
Oh, I know. Yes. The fucking
we're not gonna
almond
have, like,
tree
food.
Debacle.
Like, yeah.
That is a whole different episode, but yes.
I'll come back for that one.
Yes. Yes.
I got shit to say about bees.
Yes.
But, you know, like, I'm trying to find ways to turn that into like a healthier activation. Like, let's, you know, let's go camping. We'll set up like a cocktail station. If you want to make yourself like a honey forward cocktail with different local honeys, juices, blah, blah, blah. Let's do that. But it doesn't have to be. I mean, I was a bartender and a buyer for years. And so many of the events and activations that ambassadors held was really like, let's just have happy hour together.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that, right. You know, but I've been to so many of those events. And I think that a lot of these brands out there want to do something different. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I've noticed is, especially since COVID, people are focusing more and more on health. And so not only do brands want to do something a little healthier, mm-hmm. bartenders want to be healthier, servers want to be healthier. Yep. So let's go for a hike. Let's go fishing. You know, I'll talk about Aberfeldy until your ears fall off. Jesus.
Oh my God. Nariba.
I'm sorry. The scotch was warm.
Carry on, Tom. Why?
All right, so that was a great podcast. I'm going to get out of
here. No, you're good. We're,
I can taste your breakfast.
Everything
my
is
fine. My face is warm.
No. Fine. We're good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have noticed that a lot of companies are trying to focus more on health.
I'm going to drink this penicillin.
We're responding to what consumers
spirit
want.
Free.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
We're responding to consumers, and consumers want to be healthier. Right. Ambassadors want to be healthier. You know, a lot of ambassadors are from like the same generation. A lot of us are the same age. We all bartended together. We all hung out at bars together. I'm 34 years old, you know, so are a lot of my friends, if not older. And, you know, we want to be healthier and we want to take care of ourselves. And, you know, wellness is important, both, you know, mental, physical, emotional. Yeah. And, you know, it took me 34 years to realize that.
And also, I think it's nice, finally, you know, there's a point to where, you know, it was celebrated being, you know, the asshole in the bar, just like, I'm a trash human being. And
yeah,
so
the dumpster fire culture. You know,
years. And I always thought that shit was so tired. And I felt like certain personalities could get away with that because I was kind of part of their whole, you know, their whole vibe. Mm-hmm. But anyhow, I'm happy to see not only you specifically, but others in the industry understanding that, you know, like becoming more hospitable to themselves.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to just being like, oh, well, I'm going to go in, I'm going to make my money. You know, it's like, fuck everyone else all day, every day.
I feel like we have seen it because we surround ourselves with people who have the same forward moving trajectory, but it's not the reality. Yep. And I think that, like, I'm very excited at how much easier it is to go out and like not have to, you know, ask about having an NA beverage because they have them on menus now.
Yeah.
But I feel like
got ways to go.
Specifically in fine dining, it is expected of you to like do whatever your bosses are doing to like make that connection and make that growth happen. And I am excited for a day where it does not come around alcohol to do that. But I think that like we are talking about a reality we want to see versus what is actually happening.
I think
to remind people to like
the work move still that needs to be done.
Yeah, it still needs to be done.
Still needs to be done. And with that, Thomas, what are some resources that exist to help the industry with, you know, coping mechanisms, addiction, abuse? Are you familiar with any? You know, because we'd love to hear that. And if not, then, you know, what would you like to see?
Well, myself and a few friends who are also in the industry, who I'm not going to name, but are also sober, have definitely talked about trying to start some kind of like industry support group. There are things out there. But honestly, I think everybody in the industry probably knows at least one person who stopped drinking or stopped using and talk to that person, you know, figure out, ask them what their journey was. Part of this is, you know, part of cleaning up is like what a lot of us refer to as like acts of service. And one of those is definitely like helping other people out, you know,
community.
Yeah. And it's one of the things that I did. You know, I have a very, very close friend of mine who runs a very successful bar here in Chicago. And He got sober a little over a year ago, and when I started on this path, he was one of the first people I reached out to. And then also my old boss, he won't mind being named. He's very active in the sober community, but Billy Lawless from The Gauge has been sober for 24 years.
That's amazing.
It's incredible. And I called him crying back in October, and he told me, like, you know, sober up, you know, call me tomorrow.
Yep.
And he's been there for me every day since. I talked to him 5 times a week, probably. If you told me when I started working for Billy, like, at some point, like, gonna need ya. But I mean, we're out there. We're not that rare. We aren't the unicorns that people make sober industry folk out to be.
Right.
Talk to your friends. And then, I mean, the other huge thing for me, and it's classic and cliche, but I go to AA meetings, you know. And one of the things that they really, really help with is when I get anxiety or, like, really stressed out thinking about some of the terrible things I've done, I hear that guy's story, and then, like, oh shit, like, all right, you know, we're all kind of degenerates in our own way. But, and I will say, you know, I know a lot of people are hesitant on AA. It sounds like a cult. There is, they use the word God a lot. And I'm not a religious person in any way.
Well, it's because you were raised Catholic.
I was raised Catholic, so I'm not religious.
Yeah. Same.
And I also like think for myself. But,
sorry, Mom.
Yeah. Whatever. she's not religious either.
Yeah. Oh, I'm talking about my mom.
Sorry, she... Grandma. Right. But she's old. She's not listening. She doesn't know what podcasts are. But, you know, if you're hesitant about that aspect of it, I would say don't be. You know, I was talking to someone in one of my first days and just saying, like, I don't like this whole God thing. They're always telling you to, like, rely on God, you know, turn to God. And he goes, man, I don't believe in God. I do believe in G-O-D, group of drunks. Oh. So I rely on this group of drunks to help me. And I'm like, oh, shit, like, that's tight.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just look past that aspect. Also, you know, my phone number is 847-602-1239. Call me up. Send me a text. Oh. You know, I've gotten a few texts lately about people who just want to, you know, start on that that journey. And I'm not far in, you know, but if you have questions, hit me up. You know, do
That's
it.
That's fucking amazing.
Email is thomasmooneyham@gmail.com.
Goddamn. You know,
I got really original when I put that email together.
You nailed have it. To go to a bathroom and take a picture of your number in a stall and text you.
It's there. You'll find it. There are. You're like, there's some bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
You're like, there are,
no, but
there
I mean,
are ways to find
hit me up. You know, talk to your friends. You know, it's
perfect.
There's a big support structure out there.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I want to cheer. Well, I want to do an air cheers to that.
Because we're still in a panorama.
You know, a patriotics, if you will. Mm-hmm. Yes, air cheers with this beautiful penicillin. Spirit-free penicillin. Yes.
The, is it pronounced lapsang? Okay. Ashley spritzed my hand with it earlier, the tea. And it's like the same like peaty bits as the scotch, but it makes it so delightful. I like
this. I love a penicillin.
Penicillins are, in my opinion, like one of those great examples of a true modern classic. Like, penicillin's been around for 14 years, 15 years or something. It was invented by Sam Ross in New York in the early 2000s.
It's been around for as long as we've known one another.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I thought it would be it had a longer history.
It's a modern classic. It's like the paper plane. You know,
penicillin has been around longer than that.
The penicillin. They did,
Okay. And also,
I was trying to make a dad joke.
The other penicillin our producer is allergic to, but sorry, Max.
Yeah, don't get sick, homie.
Don't get sick, you know.
Right.
Okay. There you go. Yeah.
He's like actively dying from.
He's like I'm doing my best.
I'm okay.
Right.
We have 31 more hours.
He's laying down.
Right. But yeah, I'm rarely ever speechless, but above all else, like, I'm extremely thankful for this conversation. Like, yeah, I just...
Would you say you needed it, like, some penicillin? No.
I would say...
I'm gonna go.
You know, see, and on that, you know, it's a wrap. Right. But before we wrap, I want to, again, thank you. I want to thank our friends over at Ritual Beverage and also the amazing, amazing folks at Just Ice. And always and forever, Blind Barber, for hosting this necessary conversation. 110. Our beautiful producer, Max. Thank you.
He's not actually dying.
Yeah, he's actually doing great.
He looks healthy.
Yes. He's ready to go. Bada bing, bada boom. And then Ashley Christine of Garnet. Yes, sorry. Pardon me. I just had another sip of this delicious penicillin.
And it's an NA cocktail.
Yeah.
Yes, the spirit-free beverage over here. And on that note...
Wait.
Yes.
What about our scotch?
Yes, I was getting to that right now.
Okay.
And on that note, I want to thank Aberfeldy for being a part of this conversation as well. And I am Justin Arnett Graham, and you can find me on Instagram, which is What's Beco, WHATSBECO.
And this is Nariba Shepherd. Forgot how to introduce myself for a second. And you can find me at Rebaru, Rebaru, on Instagram as well.
And where can we find you, Thomas?
You want my address?
No. just on the social world, you know?
Thomas Mooneyham, Instagram. Again, I got really creative. It's just my name.
Great.
Thomas Mooneyham.
Sweet.
Mooneyham. I know it's a silly last name.
Before we go, I just need to tell you out loud, you look exactly like my best friend, Mark. And I've been trying.
Is he handsome as shit?
You guys look exactly the same, except he's a ginger. That's the only difference.
So, like, not.
He's like strawberry milkshake. You're more like a espresso latte.
Thank you. All right.
Yes. Well, and on that note.
Yeah, sorry.
Peace.
Bye.
Thank you, guys.